For those of you that have not seen this podcast.
We'll call it a podcast.
We do it every Sunday morning at 8:45 Pacific Standard Time, and start out with some
Genus news,
general beer news going around. We go on to a beer of the week, and then go on to a couple discussion topics when we finish out with general questions that all you can toss our way.
On today's episode, our beer of the week is a secret, as it always is until you hear our beer of the week jingle. Our topics have to do with brewing winter beers and brewing pastry stout / sweet beers, beers that are great for winter, but you need to start brewing now.
Because it is Christmas in July.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool theme.
I know. I feel like we should have done it earlier. Actually, no, it's like mid-month. All right, good enough, close enough. Anyway, so Genus News. What do we do this week at Genus? We have a peanut butter and jelly sour. I told you that was on your shirt.
Yeah, but now my wife told me, so now I have to take it off. Peanut butter and jelly sour, that's on tap right now, and it is tasting delicious. It was a raw ale sour that we did a few weeks ago in collaboration with Four Eyed Guys Brewing. Turned out really, really tasty, coming straight out of the fermenter. We actually did a couple different variations of it, but it had a nice malty, nutty middle to it, and so we blended that into, we did that as a cobbler beer, we did that as a key lime pie beer, and the most recent iteration was adding a lot of cranberry juice and some strawberry extracts to make a peanut butter and jelly beer.
Yeah, and it somehow came together in a remarkable conglomeration of goodness. I did see we got some extra kegs of it back there too, right?
Oh yeah, we got plenty of it. I think we took four kegs and then maybe a sixtal, and then nice. Alex took four kegs and then a sixtal.
Well, that's good because it has been selling like mad. So if you guys want to try this, better get in before it's gone, because while it does sound like we have some backup kegs, I doubt it will last for too long.
Hell Brews is not hungover today. Good on you, Hell Brews. Can't say the same.
Got to be a first time for everything, right? we got a video on all the mistakes people do for hazies uploaded, I'm sure.
Yeah, if you've been brewing hazies and want some tips on what not to do, check that out.
Yeah, a lot of you probably have already watched that. We got people are finally checking out our website for some beer kits. We do have both the Caster Muncher and the West Coast IPA up there now. So
if you're looking for some fun beer kits, we only have two of them so far because we want to make sure that we're getting out the kits as fresh as possible. So check out our website if you want to try to buy some kits from us. Also, yeah, some shirts are on there if you want to get some swag, although those will be about a 3 to 4 week delivery time because COVID is slowing down some shippings.
Yeah. For the shirts, not the beer
not
kits.
For the, yeah, the beer kits will be there in a couple days.
We're still trying to get to you. Yeah. Yeah.
If you're in the continental U.S.
And if you guys actually kind of support us by going and buying some of those beer kits, that'll give me feedback to hopefully put more available on the website for you. And what else have we got? Oh, Peter's going to grab you a quote-unquote, in my notes, dope new t-shirt design. What are we, cool kids now?
Not yet available on the website, but we'll be doing a whole video on it when it is.
Hey, somebody's from Kelowna. I know where that is.
Hopefully everyone saw that.
All right. Yeah, Peter showed you real fast. Yeah. Available. Is it available on our website?
Not yet available. We'll do a whole video on it when it's available.
All right. We'll do a whole video on it. Yeah, that's a design that we actually paid a different person to do. And I think they did a pretty good job of it.
I'm impressed. I think it worked out well.
We also have Omega Yeast coming into the store. So that's going to be a fun new yeast and more inventory for Josh to yell at us about.
That's right. I hear a couple of you on the last few weeks of live streams have been mentioning the Letra Quike strain that they just came out with. There's also been a couple of other strains from Omega that I've been itching to try. So I figured why not go ahead and set up an account and get those heading this way.
Wait, did you put ascorbic acid in the post? Somebody's already asking. Dang it. We're going to do a whole video on ascorbic acid.
We almost wanted to one of these live streams, we're going to title How You Put Ascorbic Acid in Beer, and that's all we're going to talk about for the entire hour live stream.
Yeah. All right. And then to finish up our beer news, we also, speaking of yeast, finally got some POG from Imperial Yeast in. So that's the A37 strain. So we have yet to use it, but we are excited to try to throw that in our next batch of hazy. So.
Yeah, lots of new Quike strains coming out, which I'm pretty excited about.
I know, we have like 3 or 4 different strains now. It's
yeah,
crazy.
I think once we get the Omega yeast in, I think we'll have 4 or 5 in stock. Probably yeah. 4 in stock, and then that makes 5 that we've had total.
Yep.
But that'll be fun.
All right, well, let's go right on to our
Beer of the Week. Bump, 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 Beer of the Week.
Pew! All right, and that is, because, you know, Christmas in July. It is going to be winter seasonal BJCP guidelines, category 30C, aka your Christmas beers.
Yeah, we're gonna call it your Christmas beers. Sorry if you don't celebrate Christmas. You can brew one of these and have a present anyway.
Yeah, I mean they're gonna be there regardless. Yeah, so this category is notorious for being big, boozy malt bombs, but also balanced out with usually a lot of herbal sort of adjuncts to them.
Yeah, so you want something that's going to be bright. Some piney is a very common characteristic when it comes to these, and something that has the acidity slash the bitterness to cut through the sweet, boozy, big, thick richness that you can get off of some of these Christmas beers.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole point, so reading through the descriptor of this category is – I think they mentioned balance like 5 times in here. And what I get from it is they're basically telling you, if you don't know what you're doing with adding herbs and spices, just don't try to do this. And personally, I've had plenty of commercial examples that also are just way overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
And completely unbalanced. So I guess the whole point of this style is to find balance. Brew a beer that's designed to be balanced with the herbs and spices, as well as probably some adjunct sugars that you're going to add.
Yeah, to kick up that alcohol and make it not overly thick and viscous on your tongue.
Yeah, exactly. But to give you an example of some spices, typically your winter spices, things like clove, things like nutmeg, ginger, and there was another one I can't quite remember right now.
Whole evergreen trees.
Yeah, and then as for your adjunct sugars, you're going to add, you know, things like some dark brown sugar, some tree kale, or even molasses.
Maple syrup can go pretty well in
maple
this.
Syrup, exactly. And those are just going to help that beer from getting too thick. So let's, speaking of being thick, let's go on to our malt of the week.
A malt of the week. Bum, bum, bum. Malt of the week. Yeah.
I thought I said wheat, but I think I actually said week.
So the malt of the week is chocolate wheat. Chocolate wheat's a phenomenal way to get some dark characteristics and that same kind of powdery cocoa feel that you get from a chocolate style malt, but it's really nice in these Christmas beers, or if you want a more subtle approach instead of a roast bomb, because it's soft and fruity, and then because it's wheat, it also doesn't have husks, which means it's not going to be as bitter or astringent as roasted barley.
Yeah, so that is one of the characteristics of this style, is that you don't want to load up on really much of anything for heavily roasted malts, you know. It does mention that you can have some toastiness in there, but that heavy roast character that you're going to get in something like a stout really isn't too appropriate for this style. You want to really load up on that complex malt character and that fruitiness that Peter's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So chocolate wheat would be a fantastic one. It's going to help darken up that beer. I would suggest using it in a pretty low amount. Definitely no more than maybe a half pound. I would probably shoot for closer to maybe only 4 ounces or so, maybe 5 ounces per your 5 gallon
batch.
Kind
of depending on where you're going in the color spectrum. This could be a pretty broad color, but yeah, somewhere in that 4 ounces will get you in that like nice rich amber spectrum, depending on your malts that precede the chocolate wheat and your grain bill. Or if you wanted to go up to that half pound or a little bit more than that, you can get into that brown or maybe almost portery kind of color.
Yeah, which actually this one doesn't even list color stats, which is interesting. Either.
Yeah.
But yeah, very, very wide spectrum of the style. So anyway, so let's go on to our hop of the week, which is actually Simcoe. Simcoe, why'd you choose Simcoe?
Simcoe's a fun hop because when it first came out, it was more piney than it is now. It's kind of turned into more of a tropical fruit bomb, but it is still kind of reminiscent subtly of that evergreen tree feel. And the fruitiness, I think, blend really well in with any sort of bright spices that you could be adding to this. Let's say you use Simcoe and a little bit of orange peel. That all of a sudden turns that fruitiness into a little bit of kind of nice, subtle, wintry vibe.
A little bit of tips, spruce tips.
Yeah, if you put the tips in, then...
Little juniper berries.
There we go. Put tips the tips and in and dangle your berries. Yeah. then you got some. That's how you make Christmas beer.
Which I can actually see that working really well, honestly, with Simcoe and that, maybe keeping the color a little on the light end of things.
For sure. Yeah. That would be very much like the OG Deschutes' like Super Jubilee Ale.
Yep. And then our yeast, because the yeast can be pretty wide variety. Typically, you're going to see a lot of English strains used to ferment these beers.
Yeah.
But Belgian strains are by no means out of the question. And so we've got actually Whiteout. This is going to build on, you know, it's going to push through the clove character. That's for those of you that aren't familiar with Whiteout strain. It's from Imperial Yeast. It is their wit beer strain. So it's going to build up on any kind of nice, like, clovey type character, that kind of white pepper note. You'll get a little bit from that yeast as well.
And really building on a lot of spices that are going to come naturally from the way that the beer is brewed by itself, rather than having to rely on you adding too much spices. Because in my opinion, it's a lot easier for you to go overboard in spices than it is for your yeast to go overboard in spices.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I see a lot, where people try to add additional spices to when they're using, you know, like a wit beer strain or a French Saison strain, where really that spiciness is coming from the yeast itself. And so you really don't have to add anything additional to that.
Might help you keep things in balance. Again, a lot of these winter beers are going to be that classic English strain, but this is a really fun one to play around with, and so we recommend trying it. It's really fun.
And I guess we have our adjunct of the week now, too.
Because why not?
Which is going to be trees.
Add trees to your beer.
Add trees.
We've actually done this a couple different times. My favorite time that I tell people a lot is when we brewed a collab beer with Bellwether Brewing Company. And we actually, this was in January, we used the Christmas tree that they were using as a Christmas tree in their tap room. We put that in a beer. And it was phenomenally, like, not just that evergreen kind of feel, but it was also orangey.
Yeah. Definitely. So you get a lot of, depending, I guess it depends on the tree too. General evergreens, especially like your spruces, even your, what did we have? We had,
that was a fir, I think.
I think it was a noble fir. Yeah. It was literally a Christmas tree. So yeah, some fir trees, I think even Doug firs that we got a lot around here to some extent will give you a little bit of that sort of citrusy, but a different citrusy than like, it's not a grapefruit.
Right.
It's very bright. And like almost lemon limey. I don't know.
I was going to say like a citronellol almost, but without the, or citron, like the candles. But not as aggro.
Not quite as intense. But yeah, no, works really nicely if you balance it with the right kind of beer. And a little bit actually goes a long way.
Oh, yeah.
It's very surprising on, you know, throwing at home, for instance, throwing, you know, maybe a half a dozen small boughs in the bottom of your mash tun, you'll actually get a significant impact on the flavor from that.
Yeah, play around with it, though. And then if you want to know what the flavor of the tree is going to be, feel free to open up a couple of like younger branches. That's kind of what I like to look at. Open up the younger branches and smell the inside.
Yeah, or make a little tea with them in some hot water. That'll give you a really great idea of what you're looking at for flavor-wise. I think that sums up our beer of the week. Otherwise, make sure we probably missed a few things here. Sorry, guys. But so the big takeaway on the beer of the week is going to be higher alcohol. These are also generally above 6%. Usually they're actually pushing double digits.
Yep.
You have a nice, thick, complex malt bill to them. Not too dark, not too roasty. And then that's also balanced out with, some different flavor profiles from playing with different yeast strains, and then also playing with different spices, different herbs, as well as some adjunct sugars.
Yep. So make a nice pseudo thick, but not too thick, balanced, boozy, spicy
balanced
beer.
And balanced. Always remember balance in it. Yeah.
It's all about that balance.
All about that balance.
All right. Well, let's move on to our topic number one. And this ties right into Christmas beers in July. It is beers you should be brewing right now for fall/winter.
Well, whoa, crazy concept. It's like we just covered one of those beers.
Christmas beers is one of those, by the way, if you didn't figure that out.
Middle of the summer, generally, I guess, unless you're down in Australia or South America. Not South America.
If you're below the equator.
Yeah, if you're below the equator. I was like, what am I thinking right now?
Do people below the equator think that we're below the equator?
No, we're above the equator.
Yeah, we are.
Never mind.
We're not trying to say we're above you, but.
God damn it, Peter. All right. So anyway, in the northern hemisphere, it is summer.
Yes.
And it's hot right now. You're probably not thinking about brewing, you know, a big, rich, thick beer at the moment. But the reality is that is exactly what you should be thinking.
Because a lot of those are going to take anywhere between 3 and 6 months to start to get into that good, well-developed flavor that you're looking for. And so we want to make sure that you are brewing those right now. Let's talk about the ones that you might already be a little bit too late for, because they're going to take some lagering time to get nice and fresh and clear, but they are perfect for that early fall weather, and that is going to be your classic Märzen styles like Oktoberfest.
Yeah, so things like Oktoberfest, even some of your Bock beers, fantastic time to brew those. Those are probably going to need, about 3 months from now, just because those beers lager so elegantly. There's nothing better than having an Oktoberfest or Märzen-style beer that's, you know, been sitting nice and cold in a keg for at least 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's once it's properly lagered, it turns from this maybe already too bright with some malty flavors, it's a little bit disjointed, to something that has a nice balanced malty characteristic. And the fact that it is smoothed out and crisped up and cleared by the lagering process makes that malt flavor come forward so much better.
Especially when you're a home brewer, because that's one thing that the commercial guys you really won't see do is you know, when you keg a beer and let it kind of condition like that, you still have some yeast in there, so you're still actually you're still getting sort of that natural conditioning cycle where the big guys will, you know, filter, pasteurize, do whatever terrible things they're gonna do to that beer.
They'll just spin it around a ton until all the little bits fall out, and I ended up with this flavored alcoholic water.
Exactly. So you end up with more complexity in the end. The stability of the beer is gonna be better, and you're gonna end up with a, you know, really tasty beer in the end.
So
Brew Martins, like I said, Bock beers, Doppelbocks, even an Eisbock is probably not too late for. That's probably gonna have to sit till midwinter, but.
Yeah, but still, so that's definitely getting into, like, maybe some January territory. But if you brew it well enough and you get it nice and big and boozy, and then you actually do the properizing process, something like that can get up to that 11, 12%.
Perfect time for a Baltic Porter right now as well. Yep.
So basically what we're saying is any of those lager-style beers that need to lean towards the malty side, so Baltic Porter, anything that's going to be on that higher alcohol range, like Bock, Baltic Porters, those are all be phenomenal to brew right now, and they're going to get you from – like October to January, February is going to be when those are starting to peak out.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's nothing more fun than doing a triple decoction on a 95 degree day, right?
Exactly. Everyone loves that. Just standing over a hot stove, just pumping a bunch of mash into a kettle and watching it steam back up in your face. Yeah.
Or honestly, the other thing too, kind of a side note right now, but is actually brewing a barley wine for next summer. That's one thing I know I've probably mentioned it on here before, but I always try to brew a barley wine on the summer solstice and a imperial stout on the winter solstice to drink the next year. So
Be prepared for some well aging. If you brew a 10-gallon batch, or if you do a double batch of something like that, it's really nice because you can put some of it on oak and let it sit for the whole year, and then you can have some ready in that fall winter kind of time, and you can get kind of two different ranges of what that beer is going to taste like.
Yep,
which is always good.
So let's go on to kind of our next style, and that's going to be stouts. People don't think about stouts in the summer until it's too late. I know I'm always ready for a dark beer come more or less mid-August.
Right.
And then I go and try to find one, and literally nobody has them.
Yep. But if you're going to do a proper aged stout, like anything above 8%, I mean, it's going to take a couple months to get ready. And so you're really – I don't personally want my stouts in August, but you start seeing them pop up on the shelves in that October, November range, and you're like, oh, I want to brew a stout. That's a great idea. Yeah. And then guess when your stout's finally tasting its prime, just in time for spring. So go ahead and brew it now, and then
– You're talking about imperial stouts then, kind of a thing then, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm even – towards the end of the summer, I personally like –
oh, like a nice dry stout? Yeah.
Yeah.
The Irish-style stouts, people don't think about doing an Irish-style stout. That's going to be ready in August if you do that. But, yeah, that light grain bill, that super high flaked barley kind of richness that you can get off of those. And then if you do a mix from, you can even add a little bit of Brett to it to funkify it. Do a proper Irish stout.
Oh, yeah. Brett's the way to go.
Those are really, really good in the summer.
We did that, like, semi-incidentally, didn't we, once? And it turned out absolutely amazing, where we, like, racked something onto Brett because YOLO.
So
stouts are another one to consider. So for long term, you know, your big boozier stouts, again, kind of falling into that same range as your lagers, and then for short term, actually doing some dry stouts or even some tropical stouts.
Someone just mentioned tropical stout.
I was gonna say, just to balance out those big thick hazy IPAs that you've been drinking with tons and tons of lactose in them.
Right. Yeah. You know, hazy IPAs are good and all, but at the same time, you can't just have hazies. I like to go back to like lagers all the time, like light summer lagers, but, you know, just cause I got to balance out my palate and not get too weighed down. But
yeah, speaking of weighing down, let's just transition right into our next topic.
Oh, I thought we're not going to talk about mixed firms.
Oh no. Mixed firms. Just kidding.
So the next beer that's going to be ready and really great for Thanksgiving time, my favorite style of beer out of all the styles of beers to brew, is mixed firms.
Mixed fermentations are going to take some time, but you're going to get a lot more complexity from them. And in a nutshell, for those of you that are not in the wise on mixed fermentations, it literally just means that you are blending multiple yeast strains or multiple bacteria together. to create a beautiful, beautiful symphony of flavors.
And the reason that it is good to be brewing right now in the middle of summer, if you're in the northern hemisphere, is because in the summer you can actually get access to some warmer weather, which is going to make your Brett work a lot faster and your Lactompedia work a lot faster too. So if you're doing something into a carboy that has multiple yeasts going onto it, or multiple like cultures going onto it, you'll get a more aged complexity a lot faster. So they actually still might be ready in winter or in fall. Whereas if you had a nice cool room, something that was in the standard fermentation temperature range, your mixed ferment beer is probably going to take about a year to get done.
Yeah, definitely. Temperature has a huge impact on really any kind of beer that's got, yeah, either bacteria or Brettanomyces in it. Taking advantage of those kind of like 80-ish degree ambient temps will really expedite that that sort of aging process and that and getting the flavors out of those yeast and bacteria that you're looking for.
Yeah. Someone says they like chili in a big stout. When would you recommend adding it? A lot of them can go in the boil, actually, and I do like dehydrated chilies in the boils. We have Morito chilies from Willett Beer Number 3, wherever that is. And
Chili peppers? I thought they were talking about just like chili.
No, he like, just like, yeah, when you recommend a can of chili in my big stouts.
I was going to say, I'd recommend it in your mouth, yeah. But like chili stout.
Although making chili a chili stout with stout works out really well. I make my chilies with IPAs because I like the extra zest, but you can make them some thicker, sweeter chilies with stouts, which tastes really good.
Oh, now I'm craving chili.
Me too. That sounds good. We should have a chili cook-off.
Chili cook-off.
Give us a thumbs up if you want us to do a chili cook-off live on next Sunday's live stream. Anyways, there's 115 people of you, 115 of you watching right now. So if you do want to give us a thumbs up, that'd be super cool. Now we can go on to dessert beers.
All right, now we're on to dessert beers. Great segue.
I had to look it up, by the way. I never know how to spell that. Like dessert and desert is like one of the few words that I'm like, it never cements in my head how to spell which one.
Yep, no, you definitely spelled it wrong.
I spelled it wrong on here, but I spelled it right on the live stream.
Oh, okay.
All right, so let's talk about, first of all, so what is a dessert beer? Dessert beer, think those pastry stouts. It's beers with big lampooned sweet flavors, and so you're trying to get those beers to taste like something. You want it to taste like a cinnamon roll, like a maple bar. You want it to taste like, you know, something that's going to remind you of an actual specific dessert rather than just a generally big sweet beer.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that we're going to start seeing a lot of these beers coming out in the fall, especially with the sort of weird climate that we're in these days. And because these are going to be great kind of to-go canned beers, right? These
absolutely,
aren't, these
yeah.
aren't something that a lot of people are going to want to go and sit in a tap room, you know, session out three or four of them. But as a to-go type thing, when they're at home, which is kind of what everybody's doing right now,
yeah,
they're definitely a big hit.
Yeah, so I kind of think of them as like the milkshake IPAs of the dark beer world. Great analogy, Peter.
Milkshake IPAs honestly fall into that dessert category for me too.
Yeah, they do. They're definitely like that lampooned fruitiness. They get you that strawberry milkshake flavor all in a beer, which is super duper.
Yeah. So let's talk about how you're gonna make these, and how they differ from, you know, any other kind of beer style. And you know, I think the obvious one is gonna be lactose.
Yeah.
Lactose sugar is milk sugar. It's non-fermentable. So you're going to end up with a lot of that sort of milk sweetness left over in the final beer.
So yeah, lactose is a great way to make sure that you're ending up with that thick final gravity too. So that's something we should probably talk about. You can be aiming for, 10.20 to 10.30, even maybe a little bit higher for that final gravity.
Yeah.
These beers can be
thick.
Really sweet.
Yeah.
But that's good. That's what you're going for. So lactose is really common if you want anything in the, let's say a cappuccino, anything in the milk themed world. So it's a great way to kind of build a base, but there are other non-fermentable sugars that you can add sweetness to your beer if you didn't get there just with natural fermentation.
As for the amount of lactose, this is going to vary all depending on, you know, what goal you're trying to achieve. But this can be anywhere from, you know, as little as 8 ounces, if you're just looking for just a touch of that back sweetness, all the way up to a couple pounds for like a 5 gallon batch.
Yeah, 23 liter batch for you guys, or 19 liter batch for you guys.
For the rest of the world.
Yeah, that aren't American.
So we're talking about a lot of lactose sugar going into a beer, and that's really what's going to give you like the, you know, the donut beers, and like Peter's talking about the cappuccinos, and honestly I've seen quantities that high in milkshake IPAs as well.
Yeah, you can definitely go big on these. Other non-fermentables you can add, by the way, stevia I don't recommend adding because it's got kind of a medicinal sweetness, but we do use monk fruit extract or monk fruit sugar a lot to build the same kind of base, and so if you don't want necessarily that milky sweetness, monk fruit's a great way to add a non-fermentable as well.
Strawberry cheesecake beers. That's somebody actually just wrote that down there.
Dessert goza.
Yes.
Wait. Yeah. Well, I'm like, well, how?
That's an oxymoron, isn't
it? Let's talk about other ways to keep these beers sweet, though, because it's not just all going to come from what you're adding that's going to be non-fermentable. So it's not coming from the lactose and the monk fruit extract. There's other ways to do it. And the first and probably easiest to think about is just starting with a really big malt bill.
Yeah, so opposite thing of what you might do for something like a West Coast IPA, where West Coast IPA, you're trying to add, you know, really, really high amount of high fermentables, you know, adding some corn sugar or something in there to keep that body nice and light. You're doing the opposite. Scratch out any kind of, you know, high fermentable simple sugar in there, and stick to a straight all grain bill. If not, you're adding kind of more adjuncts along the lines of like a hazy too.
Yeah. So yeah, go ahead and do, you know, let's say you're aiming for a higher alcohol beer a lot of the times with these anyway. But yeah, if you're using 15 to 20 pounds of malt for a 5 gallon batch, then that's going to turn into some actual residual sweetness, even if you mash low, because there's going to be some non-fermentables in those too, that'll stick through to the final product.
Yeah. So you're going to definitely want to kind of take the opposite approach. You know, we talk about Heidelberg malt a lot, which is what we love as a really light, you know, base malt, but that's not going to be in a good place for a beer like this. You're actually going to want to use probably more along the lines of a Maris Otter or some other kind of a pale ale malt, as long as it's not too
biscuity. Halcyon, one of my favorite malts of all time.
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to want to use a base malt that's already got a lot of body, a lot of chewiness to kind of back up for the flavor profile that you're going to.
Yeah, and then finally, there's another, well, I guess not finally, we got two more things on the how to keep your beer sweet. But there is another strategy to keeping your beer sweet if you get to the point where you can filter out the yeasts that are active in your fermentation after your beer is already done, or if you wanted to use something like metabisulfite, which I usually don't like doing. I prefer to filter. But you can actually back sweeten with something that actually has sugar in it if you can filter out your yeast or kill off your yeast in some way. So I'm thinking like maple syrup's a really good one.
Yeah. Maple syrup, you know, you're, again, like some brown sugar concoctions, even honey to an extent. Will really, really sweeten up a beer. Honey, you got to be careful with, though, just so it doesn't get too floral.
Yeah. Depending on the kind of honey. Or to, like, if you want that nice aggression from, like, a buckwheat honey.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, so feel free to experiment with those flavors if you're looking. I mean, maple syrups, obviously, if you're going for, like, that maple bar kind of feel. Mm-hmm. That's something that you can add. We added maple syrup to our Strix Stout a couple weeks ago, and that turned out phenomenal. Yeah. We got the maple syrup from Beanilla, which is a fantastic, flavorful company. Someone says they want us to do a carrot cake brown. That sounds delicious. I've been wanting to brew with carrot juice, so it's going to make me happen.
Oh, jeez. All right. And then so other things about dessert beers on top of the sweetness are usually going to be other adjunct flavors that are added.
So let's talk about flavors that are going to help build complexity and help build what you think of when you're picturing the final product. And so if you're doing a carrot cake brown, if you're doing a cappuccino stout, if you're doing something in that range, how are you going to start to build those flavors? I think one of the simplest ways to start building a middle flavor that can lean into a lot of other flavors is by adding some sort of vanilla.
Yeah, buying, what we do is buy a quality vanilla extract, and it can really, really add a whole new layer to the flavor of a beer. We've done it in a lot of dark beers now, actually. Depending on the extract, you're going to have varying flavors. You know, we've got the Tahitian bourbon one.
Yep.
And then we also, or not Tahitian,
Madagascar bourbon
one. And
then we have
Tahitian
vanilla. There's vanillas from all around the world. And so it's fun to experiment with different ones. But even just getting a quality neutral vanilla extract or a blended vanilla extract, it's going to be, even if it's just a basic vanilla, it's going to be way better than quality vanillas that you can buy in the store.
Yeah. So adding vanilla is probably a really great way to, like Peter said, build that middle flavor, add another layer of complexity. And I think there's also a little kind of subverse thing in our brains that when we start tasting vanilla, we immediately think that what we're tasting is sweet just because everything that we've had before has been sweet with vanilla. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great way to build that kind of body or even perception of body. They do it in the wine world. It's a big part of why oak works so well in beer and wine. It's because of those vanillins and how they treat your brain. They treat it right.
So vanilla is a great place to start. So another thing that is going to kind of balance out some of that sweetness is actually cinnamon.
Cinnamon's a great way to, first of all, have a natural antioxidant. It's good for your body. It's just an all-around great anti-inflammatory. So you really want it for all the medicinal properties, and that's the only reason to use it. Wait, what?
What?
No, so cinnamon has that nice spice, and it's also very reminiscent of a lot of different desserts that you've had. Yeah, even leaning into something like a maple bar, I keep saying cappuccino, but cinnamon, like you always get a little bit of cinnamon on top of a lot of your coffee drinks. So that's a great way to add some spice and balance out the sweetness that you're going to get from these beers, but then also remind you of some other flavors. And so with cinnamon, two things to remember. One is that the fibrous material that's in cinnamon sticks is actually a very good growth medium for bacteria, and it's also kind of astringent. And so whenever I use cinnamon, my strategy is to actually steam it and then add it in, or if I'm using sticks, I steam it and then I add it into my secondary.
So there you go. So that's how we're going to add cinnamon, just to kind of balance out everything. Spruce. Why would you put spruce in there?
Because we're talking about Christmas beers. I wanted to put spruce in there. Okay.
Okay.
You got a problem with it?
Not wouldn't have been the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of other things that we should add before spruce, but you know, I wrote this literally like 30 minutes ago.
That's fine. All right, talk about spruce then.
So spruce has nothing to do with creating a dessert beer. Really doesn't go in this style at all. But if you wanted to make like a spruce carrot cake, it could be a great spice to add.
All right. Let's go on to speaking of carrot cake, things like coconut, actually. Adding coconut to these beers is a fantastic choice.
Coconuts are really, first of all, a really recognizable flavor. So it's a flavor that takes your brain to exactly what it is when it is in your final beer.
Yeah, it's pungent, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't need too much of it. And it's a super easy thing to add. I like to buy the toasted, flaked coconut that's already processed from the store. I think it's the easiest thing to add to secondary. It's already sanitary, but if you want to give it an extra toast in the oven to make sure it's double sanitary, feel free. And then I add that directly into my secondary.
Yeah, the nice thing about coconut, you know, and cinnamon for that matter, are both of those are pretty highly aromatic. So you really are going to get that on your nose as soon as you put that glass up to your face, which sort of sets the stage for the rest of that that drinking experience.
Someone wants us to make a beer called Spruce Wayne.
Jesus.
I am vengeance. I am the knight.
So one last thing about coconut before we go on is that if you don't buy it pre-toasted, one thing that I would recommend doing is actually toasting it yourself in your oven. Doing at least some kind of a light toast will actually caramelize just a few of those sugars in there, and that can really help add to the complexity of it.
Yeah, and it also helps make it more extractable in your beer. So it breaks down some of the fibrous materials in there that's going to make it less soluble or not want to absorb into your beer.
Yeah.
Toasting it makes it so that your beer has to be reabsorbed into the coconut, and then it goes back out into your beer kind of like wood, and it tastes really great.
Yeah.
Other flavors let's talk about is, obviously we got to talk about chocolate a little bit. So what are some ways to add chocolate to these beers?
Yeah, so I even saw somebody commenting on that. So nibs are going to be the most common way to add chocolate, and that's basically chocolate in its raw form. Those you can add in several different ways.
Yeah, so cocoa nibs, if you add them to secondary, they have a phenomenal direct cocoa smelt to them, but not a lot of flavor. But a lot of the ways that you actually taste things is by smelling it first. And so adding some to secondary, I would say in the range of 2 to 4 ounces in secondary, is a good way to give that perception of chocolate being in there. If you want more of the chocolate flavor, nibs need to go late into your boil stage or even your whirlpool.
Yeah, so exactly. And that's what I found is the best results too, is kind of splitting the difference between adding in as like a 2-minute addition, you know, just enough to kind of get them hot, and then doing some kind of a dry nib addition. And one thing that I will note is that when you are adding those to your secondary, you're not getting that flavor instantly by any means. A good couple weeks in the fermenter is actually going to give you the best flavor out of them. So
some people are also saying chalaca. We've used chalaca as well. Chalaca seems to give us that middle flavor, but seems to precipitate out. And
I've had mixed. I'm not a fan of chalaca. Yeah,
it works, but it's something you definitely have to clarify out, or else it'll make your beer kind of look muddy. It's okay.
I think it's easier to use nibs. That's my conclusion on it.
Someone says make a tincture with nibs. That works too.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. So you can make an alcoholic tincture as well. But yeah, nibs also, yeah. So boil, whirlpool, dry nibs, just consider the time that you're going to need if you're adding them directly to a fermenter.
Yeah. So other ways to add flavors, including chocolate, including any of these other flavors, and something that we use occasionally is finding a really nice, high-end syrup or extract and adding that right into your fermenter.
Yeah, definitely. So some syrups, some like say some fruit syrup, something like, you know, raspberry or strawberry syrup. That can, you know, really like that with some nibs on a dark beer could be absolutely fantastic.
Some of them are sugar-free.
Yep, some of them are sugar-free, so that's always good stuff right there. And then also even somewhere along the sort of citrusy line. So say you've got like a blood orange syrup, or something like that. That can almost get that, what's that chocolate variety? Oh, you're grabbing some right there.
High end good stuff. And then also pretty cheap stuff, but still works.
So there's like, you know, those chocolates that have the orange stuff in them. You can almost sort of mock up that in a beer itself. We got that, and let's see what else we got. Speaking of oranges, the other thing you could actually do is get some kind of a sweet orange peel or other citrus zests. And these you can get actually a pretty quick little infusion from. I found that fresh is always better, and zesting directly into a sort of secondary or your primary fermenter just a day or two before you plan on kegging can give you a fantastic little nose off of that beer.
And a little bit of that brightness actually helps balance out some otherwise sweet beers. And again, it's all about trying to get focused on whatever flavor you want to end up in the final product. So that chocolate orange flavor, really easy one to accomplish, and it tastes really great in beer. But there's a lot of it, like even carrot cake, a little bit of that orange freshness can help give you the perception of carrot, even if your carrot flavor isn't going to directly end up right in the beer.
Yeah, that little bit of acidity kind of thing coming through. So.
Really helps pop it. Someone says Apex Flavors is an awesome line of flavor extracts. I haven't used Apex, but that sounds really good. I know there's a lot. So we tried Amaretti a while ago, and we tried a number of the Amarettis, and it was very, very difficult for us to get those to taste good in beer.
Yeah, they were pretty bad. I did make the Mojito one, though.
Yeah.
That was like a borderline success.
Yeah, there was. So be sure to play around in small doses when you're playing around with extracts and flavors to make sure that they're going to taste good before dosing an entire batch, because we definitely got burned by a couple of those thinking, this will work. Says it's got a great flavor, and then you put it in beer and you're like, why does it taste so fake?
Yeah, exactly. That's the hardest thing for sure with any flavoring flavors, is finding something that doesn't taste fake. If you want to know what a good example of things tasting fake is, go out and buy almost any form of hard seltzer.
Yeah.
Actually, a few of them are good, but more than likely, go buy a mixer pack and I guarantee
you'll find one bad one.
Yeah, I guarantee you're going to find one or two bad ones in there.
Some of them are okay. The lime truly I thought was pretty good. Someone says something about adding tobacco. Tobacco is coming up. That's kind of interesting. We can talk about that in the Q&As, though.
Yeah.
So we've talked about flavors. We've talked about sweetness, ways to add those. Let's talk about the last part of making a dessert beer, and that is Christmas and Julying it.
So, again, following our sort of theme of big, dark, boozy beers, the boozier a beer is, the longer time you're going to need to condition that beer, and the sweeter a beer is, the longer time you're going to need to condition that beer.
Yeah, so basically you have a lot of flavors that when they first go into the beer, they're going to be disjointed. They're going to taste like one flavor and then another flavor and then another flavor and not really meld into one cohesive idea in your brain. But conditioning actually allows those to settle into each other. The alcohol kind of tamper out a little bit, and the flavors will blend and smooth out. And so when you have your final product, instead of having like, hey, this is a pretty quality beer with some big, sweet, pastry-like flavors, you have, hey, this is a really good whatever you're going for. This is a really good cappuccino stout or carrot cake brown or whatever. So give those beers time to let all the flavors meld together.
Yeah, and what'll happen, you know, when these beers are new is you'll probably get things that jump out at you, like especially if you're a little bit higher alcohol. You might get that like that harsh alcohol bite at first. You might get some sort of tannic quality depending on what kind of adjuncts you might be adding. It might even taste like it's too bitter. And these are all things that are going to fade out with time. Those sort of off flavors that you might pick up are going to all fade away. It's kind of part of a natural oxidization process. And then, like Peter said, all the good stuff are going to kind of meld together and come through as a nice cohesive profile.
Yeah. And when conditioning, best practice, if you can, is to keep it at that nice 48 to 55 degree range. Cool, but not cold. If you get it too cold for aging, it'll brighten up, it'll lager up and become crisp. And that also might create some disjointed flavors. So you really wanted to let it sit in that 48 to 55 degree temperature range if possible. If it goes too warm, it's going to be like fruity and swampy.
Yeah.
So proper conditioning will be your friend.
Yeah. If you don't have those conditions, a nice coolish basement is probably the most ideal spot that a lot of people are going to have.
Yeah.
So basement, even a crawl space of your house is probably fine as long as it's not too damp.
Yeah.
What are tonka beans, by the way?
Tonka beans are, they're illegal in the U.S. apparently.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and open it up to general questioning now. I think that sums up our discussion topics.
Thanks, everyone who is currently tuned in. We appreciate you all. If some of you are tuned in and haven't yet put a thumbs up on this video, please go ahead and give us a like. I see there's 131 of you.
What?
So right. I expect at least 49 likes right now. really shooting for the moon there.
All right. Let me scroll back through. There's a couple questions that we missed earlier.
Yeah, someone ordered citric acid instead of ascorbic acid accidentally. Are there any uses in homebrewing for citric? We actually use it quite a bit. We can use it to blend in with sours to kind of create a more dynamic pop when it comes to the flavor. Anything that you're using lemon or orange to, it might actually help brighten that up. Or you can use it in small doses for acidification of your mash. And it is also an antioxidant. It's just not as powerful of an antioxidant as ascorbic.
Yeah, the main thing to consider is that the flavor threshold is a lot lower than ascorbic acid. So,
right.
If you're really trying to kind of pump something up,
it'll taste citrusy real
quick. It'll start tasting actually citrusy, which, you know, depending on the beer you're brewing, might not be a bad thing. You
might go okay, yeah. Like I said, we've added it to a lot of sours to kind of help pop those.
Yeah.
Someone asks, is the Lutra supposed to ferment fast and not be a fruit bomb like other quite yeast strains? That is the idea of the Lutra, and that's kind of what we're excited to try out. So when you get the Omega order in, we'll definitely try to do a video on the Lutra and see if it's as baller as people say it is.
So Luke is apparently making a mango IPA, and he is asking us any tips on how to add the puree. And I think that should be pretty straightforward, actually. Generally, if it's an aseptic puree, best thing to do is actually add that right to your fermenter. Probably the same time you're adding your dry hops would be kind of a reasonable time. You will get another little re-fermentation with that. Mangoes, the only thing I'd worry about that is pectins. I don't know how much pectins mangoes have, but
but again, you're making a hazy, so
yeah. I was like, I feel like it shouldn't really be an issue.
A lot of the aseptic purees because they are pasteurized, they actually reduce the pectins in the pasteurization process.
There you go. So that should be fine then.
So, yes, people are commenting secondary. Yeah, secondary, depending on how much flavor you want, you can add it late or even in line to packaging or right before packaging. And you can add it cold if you want more of the sweetness to stay there, or you can filter out your yeast before adding it. But adding it during fermentation is going to be the easiest, and it's going to still give you that mango flavor. If you made a sweet beer already, you're not going to need the sugars from the puree. So,
man, brewery tap rooms suggestions for Seattle. Oh, geez.
To Fremont and then click what breweries are near me. First of all, you get to go to Fremont, which is really awesome. And then there's going to be like six breweries that are right next to there, so you can do a little walking tour.
You leave Seattle and go up to Bellingham? I don't know. Bellingham has some amazing breweries for a little tiny town, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Fremont District is the best, I think, walking area for multiple breweries in one spot.
All right. See some other ones.
Someone's saying they just bought their first Brewzilla. They're a newbie, and our videos are helping massively. Awesome. I appreciate you saying that. We like to be helpful.
All right. I want to address this dessert goza. How would you do a dessert goza?
Okay, so I think dessert goza, you're going to have to go with a theme, and that theme's going to have to be like orange creamsicle or something like that.
I feel like it's got to be...
It's got to go with something citrusy. So it's going to have to be a milkshake goza, obviously. Yeah. And I think it's got to be like... you could probably do something like key lime as well, actually. No, now that we're thinking about it, there's definitely a way to do this.
Yeah. You got to build off the slight bit of saltiness, too.
Yeah, I mean, but anything that's going to have like some pastry... kind of feel to it, I think would work. I think
you could
key
probably
lime.
Do, yeah.
It's got to be a key lime pie goza.
Key lime. You could do some kind of cheesecake thing with it.
Yeah, then you got the.
I can see that working.
You got the vanilla in there. You got to have some lactose. There's a way to do it.
Key lime cheesecake.
Key lime cheesecake goza. We just solved the world's problems.
All right. Somebody asked, is it true?
Someone says Populux. Yeah. Populux.
Yes, it's true. Mm-hmm. There's a random question down.
I think it's like, who loves orange creamsicle beer? Cal loves orange creamsicle beer.
All right.
What type of beer should I make first to pitch the barley wine into? Anything light, like a light amber. So someone's asking, they want to do an English barley wine. They want to build up a beer to build up their yeast. Or they want to make a beer to build up their yeast for the barley wine.
Which is actually highly recommended.
Good idea.
Great way to build up yeasties.
I think anything in the light amber world, English mild, English. So don't go anything that's not going to be super hoppy. and anything that's not going to be super boozy. So 5% amber is going to be a good way to build up that yeast, and then it'll kind of lean into the same flavors of your barley wine.
English, yeah, English mild would be pretty good too. Even a bitter, you know?
Yeah, anything in that range. A brown if it's not too hoppy and not too light. That'll all work well. Y'all messed around with smoked beers? Hell yeah, we messed around with smoked beers. We've got like 9 different smoked malts here.
What? Yeah, we actually have a smoked red in the fermenter right now, too.
Yeah, so we got a smoky red. We've got a smoked wheat, an oaky smoky wheat beer that just got kegged up pretty recently. Yeah, the smoked beers are really fun. Logan's made a Lichtenhainer, which our smoked wheat is probably the perfect thing to use for a Lichtenhainer.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have what all smokes do we have? We have classic Rausch malt. We've got oak smoked wheat malt. We've got cherrywood smoked malt. We've
got
peated malt. We've got heavy peated malt. And we've got mesquite smoked malt.
Yeah.
6 different smoked malts. Lots. What other brew supply store can you say has 6 different smoked malts on on hand?
All right. Great question from Jay Goodrich. He's saying, explain IPK.
Yeah, we made that up.
We kind of did. So
it works though. I mean, so you have the same base, a very neutral and honestly delicious base light beer from the Kolsch. So we basically made a Kolsch base, and the hops that we use are derivative hops of classic old world German hops. They're the New Zealand varieties that are all Saaz derivatives, triploid hops. They have a little bit of citrusiness, a little bit of extra tropical, so like Wakatu and all those. And the beer is just, it's phenomenally smooth, and it's got the same perception of fruitiness that you get off of a juicy IPA, just dumbed down a little bit.
Yeah, it's a fantastic beer, actually, too.
Really tasty.
Really, really great patio beer for summer. Honestly, it's pretty analogous to, I think, the technical style that we actually covered a month or two ago. Which was the, I think it was the sparkling ale, the Australian sparkling ale.
Yeah.
It's going to be definitely in that same wheelhouse. The only thing is here in the States, if we say, you know, sparkling ale, people look at us cross-eyed, but if we say Kolsch, they actually understand.
Right.
So really just a hopped up version of a Kolsch.
And don't make fun of us for making up words. We do it all the time and we're not going to stop.
Make it up words. Yeah. No, it really is. It's a hopped up version of a Kolsch, and it just works so well.
Smooth.
Because you have that nice little crispy finish on the end.
Yeah.
And it's approachable because all the hops go in late. And so you're not getting bitterness, but you're getting a nice, really, really hop forward profile.
That was the secret to it, is making sure that all the hops are going in late. And by that, I mean like Whirlpool and then also our hop back. And so it comes across smoothie and fruity, and you get the perception of all the hops that are in there, but without being bitter at all. So it actually still does kind of fit into the Kolsch world. Just, you can tell it's a little bit juicier. Someone's asking, even though it's non-fermentable, does lactose affect yeast characteristics? And the answer is sort of. Yeast is actually impacted by osmotic pressure. That basically means the density of the liquid outside of the cell versus the density of the liquid inside the cell. So that's going to affect how yeast ferment. Outside of that, it's not going to have a huge impact. And fun fact, there actually are some yeasts that can ferment lactose, but just not the ones that we use.
Is it true that the flavor after fermenting, that there isn't much flavor left after fermenting maple syrup?
Depends on the maple syrup.
Depends on the maple syrup, yeah.
There's some very pungent ones that you can definitely taste it, even though everything is fermented. And then there's some lighter ones. The one that we added, so when we were talking about maple syrup, though, we were talking about if you kill off your yeast and then add maple syrup to back sweeten the beer. But yeah, if you're adding it during fermentation, some more pungent ones will stay through after fermentation.
So I would say for that, the answer is going to be, if you got really dark syrup, expect some flavor. The lighter the color is, the less flavor you're going to get, as a result, just because they literally boiled it for less time.
Yeah.
All right. So, here's another good one from Jesse. So for New England's, Flock and Finings, no, yay, maybe say, no, really.
You don't need them.
Don't really need them. Those are going to drop out your proteins more than anything else. You want to keep those proteins in suspension. If you want to try to find your yeast, I guess, just to kind of expedite that getting in from fermenter to a keg, I don't see any harm in that. But at the same time, I really don't think it's necessary.
With good brewing practices, your final beer will basically flock itself out, like all the it'll flock off, you know, itself.
The yeast generally will drop out within a couple days of crashing. So
right. So if you brew it right, which we have a couple videos out on how to brew proper New England hazy style beers, if it's brewed correctly, then everything will work out, even in a short amount of time.
All right. What tools do we use for calculating water pH? This one right here. That's the tool we use.
Chemistry.
No. I would say, you know, there's brewing water is sort of the kind of standard nowadays, but also
Brewer's Friend's calculator.
Yeah, we use a cloud-based software called Brewer's Friend. That also has some calculators that are pretty user-friendly. I would recommend going from there. But honestly, we brew so much that we kind of are to the point where we can sort of just picture things in our mind and say, yeah, we're going to need about that much. So
a lot of guessing and checking.
We're probably like the worst people to ask because we don't actually run calculations.
We've done it enough times
that
we know.
Make things happen, yeah.
We've done calculations before, but we've just done them so many times that we kind of memorize.
Yeah, that's, I guess, what it comes
down
to.
We memorize what we're going for, and then we can kind of work around that. Someone says they dropped their phone into the fermenter while transferring from the kettle. Outside of the great smell his phone has now, should he be too worried? Personally, I like to dry phone my beers, and so I'll add my phone into secondary. I don't like to add it during primary fermentation because the yeast can get pretty active. So, yeah, maybe next time try adding your phone right into the secondary or into the keg itself. That's going to be probably better for your phone.
I would be worried that your phone might drunk dial your ex at that point.
Yeah, that could happen.
It'll be all right. Just drink it soon, you know. Don't like stick it in a bottle and let it age at 70 degrees for 10 months.
Yeah.
All right. So, ideal pH for dessert brews. That's a good one, actually. That one I haven't really thought of. I feel like the pH will generally sort itself out, so I wouldn't worry too much. I think you could probably get away with adding a little bit of acid, a little bit of lactic acid in the finish.
Depending on what you're going for.
Yeah, depending on what you're going for, if you do want to kind of drop that down, get that sort of cheesecakey like character, you know, get it in that Goza range, that'd probably be actually like a super easy way to do that, would just be to like a little lactic acid dose in the end.
Yep.
I wouldn't get too concerned over pH. I think that's one of the lesser important things.
I mean, I know in wine, a lot of people will bicarb their wine at the very end to try to give it a more alkaline flavor. But yeah, it depends on what you're going for.
Yeah.
There's definitely some citrusy ones that can probably be, more acidic.
We got Featherson Autofab thinking about thoughts on doing a Czech Pils with Mandarina Bavaria. And my thought is yes.
We've done that before, actually, and it turned out great.
That's a fantastic hop for a Czech Pils. It comes across just a little bit fruitier compared to what your traditional Czech Pils might be with something like Hallertau. It works really, really well.
And still has, you know, some reminiscence of that classic Saaz flavor. So it's within the
wheelhouse.
Yeah,
it's spot on there. There's no way you can really go wrong with it. Well, I guess if you dump like a ton of it in there, but.
One ton in a 5-gallon batch, 2,000 pounds of hops. You're not going to have any beer left.
Hop absorption, 100%.
Someone's asking, at what point would you add extract the day before kegging or bottling? We generally just add it right into package. So we'll do some test batches, some small like pint batches to figure out how much we're aiming to add. And then we'll add it right into the keg when we keg the beer on top of it.
Especially if you're worried about the potential for re-fermentation. You know, adding things at package and then keeping them nice and cold is a good way to keep
hedge
that.
Your bets.
To kind of keep that at bay if you're worried it might kick back up.
What do we brew for our small test batches? Anvil Foundry, Robo Brew, plain old pot. We use the Anvil Foundry and we use mash and boils. We've had multiples of those that we've used and they both work great. We prefer the Anvil over the mash and boil, but they're both really phenomenal pieces of equipment.
Yeah.
So
Anvil, if you're running the 220 for sure.
Yeah. If you got 220, go with Anvil 100%.
Or actually even though we've been using the DigiBoil for our, basically hot liquor tank too. That thing's a little beast.
Yeah. Have you ever added tobacco flavor to beer? Any ideas on how to do that well? There are some natural like spirits that have a tobacco flavor, so I'd probably try to blend in, you know, a good scotch or even some more aggressive wines, some more earthy wines like a Chianti might have a little bit of tobacco kind of quality. That might be a way to do it. There's a lot of debate going on below that on whether or not to add actual tobacco, nicotine, and the potential poison of nicotine. I'm not sure what nicotine's solubility is, but I'd probably start by looking that up. And if you had some nice tobacco that you wanted to make a tincture out of, try to figure out if the nicotine is soluble, if you don't want that in your final beer, and do some research on that. Other than that, I don't have a ton of information, but I would look into the nicotine solubility and potentially do a tincture. If not, then I would probably just try to blend in some spirits that have tobacco flavor already.
Yeah, I was going to say you could do that. Honestly, even the vanilla, like that bourbon vanilla, is actually kind of tobacco-y in its profile. So, yeah, you could probably find a lot of things that aren't tobacco that actually taste a lot like tobacco. So
give you the same kind of quality.
That would be another workaround for you.
Orange citrus, doesn't that kill head? Depends on your beer. In my experience, a lot of times, no. We've done some zests in plenty of beers that have really nice thick heads, but it depends on which matrix is forming the head. There are some matrices that the expressed oil from the citrus actually will dampen the head. But if you have the right matrices, the right proteins that are building that head, then no, it won't die.
Always moonshine, by the way, Dennis.
Yeah, is that water? Yeah, that was definitely moonshine.
He only drinks a gallon a day, though. Okay, and I think we are getting pretty well caught up.
Dry hopped with Sam. Someone dry hopped with Galaxy, the Samsung Galaxy, a couple weeks ago.
Oh, very nice. Yeah,
talking about the phone, dry phone.
Dry phone. That.
That's a good joke. You win the internet.
Get the get that waterproof one for sure. Is that it? Are we caught up? I think we're caught up. Alrighty.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that'll just kind of wrap it up then. If we're caught up, wait, we got one more. One more, and then I think we're gonna wrap this up. So somebody said that we mentioned New England's brewed package as quickly as possible. Do you apply this methodology to other IPA styles as well, or are they a little more resilient?
It's a little bit dependent on the IPA style. So there are certain like West Coast IPAs, they actually like hit a little bit of a peak a little bit later on. It doesn't hurt to package them early, kind of depending on what you're doing, and you always want to eliminate the risk of both excessive dry hop being on there for too long so that you get the grassy flavor. You also want to make sure that everything is sans oxygen, and packaging quickly is good for that. However, your West Coast IPAs, they, as soon as they're bottled or packaged or kegged, they might taste a little bit aggressive, a little bit disjointed in the flavor. And so they kind of hit a peak like a week later than your New England's would hit a peak.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So it's, I would say using those practices for, any hop forward beer is always a great idea. You just might have to condition some beers for an extra week or two, and then as you get onto beers that are, the darker the beer is, the less hops there are in that beer, the less you have to kind of worry about using low-dose practices.
And finally, we'll finish off with one homebrew hack that you need to know when you're going to throw your phone into the fermenter, and that is putting it onto vibrate mode for aerating your word at the beginning.
All right, everybody, give us a like right now. We're gonna finish up this show for this week. We do have to get this place opened for business today, but thank you all so much for tuning in. We will see you next week at 8:45 Pacific Standard Time.
Watch our podcast if you want to see it later.
Everybody's probably watched this all by now, so all right, thanks, everybody.